Alex, thank you so much for chatting with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure.
With Peter Bradley is a fascinating film, very special film. Excuse me. I was just wondering, how did you first come to connect with him?
Well, Peter and I both live in this pretty small town, Saugerties, New York, which is about 100 miles north of the city, in the Hudson Valley. And I met Peter like exactly 3 years ago, just after New Year's 2020, through a local art gallerist, Robert Langdon. He has a tiny little storefront art gallery on the main street here in town, called Emerge Gallery. And he, in the summer of 2019, he had, I think through a mutual friend of Peter's wife, cultivated a relationship and showed a few of Peter's paintings at his little gallery where he only shows local artists. And had a whole press release about Peter and his amazing history. Couldn't get anyone to pay attention. But my wife happened to be at the opening of that, and Robert introduced my wife, who's a filmmaker, to Peter. And Peter said, "Oh, you should make a film about me." And Katie said, "Well, my husband would be the better one to do that. He does documentaries." And she told me I totally forgot. But then my daughter, coincidentally, over her winter break from college in December, came home one day from helping Robert at Emerge and said, "Peter Bradley, have you heard about him? It's like, sounds amazing. You should try and film him." So I asked Robert for an introduction and I met Peter, and Peter from day one was like, "Yeah, let's go. You want to get your camera right now? I mean, let's start." So we just, sometimes personalities just click, and I really, there was something about Peter that felt familiar about him already to me, as some, you know how that is sometimes. And so we were just immediately really comfortable together, and I just started going over with my camera all the gear I shot it with behind me. I edited it on the computer I'm talking to you on, a little shed behind my house. And we just got in a little routine of filming whenever he had time and I wasn't working as a cinematographer on other projects. And it just kind of grew. I didn't have any preconceptions about it. And this is what I made, yeah.
You know, I can, based on the film that, you know, based on the conversations in the film, I can almost hear him saying, "You should make a film about me." I can almost hear him saying that. There's such a boldness in his voice. I love it.
Yeah, a lot of
But I'm
confidence.
wondering, you know, having met him and the time that you've spent with him, what strikes you most about him? What makes him so unique?
Well, I mean, bearing in mind, I met the Peter Bradley who was 79 years old and not his younger self, when he may not have been so willing to spend time with someone like me. He's just a really great person. I find him, the Peter you see on screen is pretty much the guy that I was with all the time. He's not into any kind of drama. He's always in a fairly good mood, and was just very open about talking about anything. And as a subject, what appealed to me most in terms of him as an artist is that he there's a lack of pretension about anything he does. It's just, "Well, this is what I do." It's very craft. It seems like very craft approach to him. And it's just, "This is, I get up every day and I paint, and that's how you get to be a good painter. And I've been doing it for like 70 years, so that's why I'm good at it," essentially. And so I just liked that. It was very chill and organic, the whole experience.
You know, I can absolutely get that feel. Honestly, he's such an amazing personality because, you know, at sometimes he'll just be like, "Yeah, this is how it is," and then other times he'll just like he was talking about, you know, running out of money, but he does it in such a way that he says, "I almost had to do a double take." It was like, "Wait a minute," but it's just, "Yeah, that's just what I'm doing." And I'm like, what?
Yeah, I mean, the extent of that financial insecurity 3 years ago, I kind of gradually came to realize as I spent more time with Peter and his wife Deborah, who's great. They're both like my biggest supporters on the project. And I kind of started to feel a weight on my shoulders to tell Peter's story, just so people would know who he is and he could sell some paintings again, because it had been decades really since he had had any kind of market, so to speak. He hadn't been represented by a gallery since 1976. He'd done shows, certainly, and he'd sold pieces. He stayed busy, but didn't have that kind of platform of, like, you know, an art dealer representing him. And, you know, his career kind of went down, and he wound up here in Saugerties, where it was cheaper. And there wasn't any bullshit of having to operate in that world of you know, the art scene. And yeah, he just plugged away. Pretty amazing.
Well, and his work is just wonderful. You know, I was wondering, you know, if you could talk a little bit about the relationship between color. My kids are home now. I'm sorry. All I hear is, oh, do upstairs, and it just threw me off. I apologize.
Oh, let me, you know, since we had a little break, maybe where you might do an edit. I don't know that I fully answered the question, like the finances. You know, the kind of remarkable thing about Peter and the turn of events in his life is that up until the age, you know, mid-30s, he seemed to be on track to be a household name in the arts. He was the only Black art dealer on Madison Avenue for a very high-end modern art gallery. I mean, it was the gallery in New York that sold Picasso. Yeah. And, you know, similar stature, early 20th century modern artists. He was the first Black artist to get represented by a major gallery, which was as late as 1972, which is sad to think. You know, and so the fact that he kind of wound up hanging out in this little house in the country where hardly anybody knew where he was just kind of crazy to me. So it's nice that he's now back up on top. You know, he's been rediscovered just in the last year and a half and doing quite well, I'm happy to say.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You talk about this and extensively in the film, but there's one point he says, I'm not interested in political art. But I wanted to ask you your feelings here, because for someone who's not interested in political art, he was highly involved, or seemed his art was involved politically in the culture of the time. I was just wondering from your perspective, whether or not even his presence in the art world was political in and of itself.
Well, that was probably the most political thing. Mm. Yeah. For his position as a Black man to reach those kind of tiers was, I'm sure, perceived by some as some kind of a threat to the status quo. But the artwork itself, you're right. I mean, he's just purely concerned with abstraction and color. And there is no message. I mean, I think one of the reasons that people seem to be enjoying the film so much that don't know anything about the arts is that you don't have to know anything about art. You know, it's just color and movement, and it's all on the surface. So you can either relate to Peter's art just on that purely visual level and emotionally, perhaps, or you don't. But you don't have to know anything, and there's no hidden meanings to it, you know. Yeah, I mean, politics. Well, Peter's just a really interesting guy. I mean, he grew up in this little town in Pennsylvania, like a mill town, not far from Pittsburgh. And, you know, there was, my understanding, you know, there was a Black community, but it was quite segregated. But he was adopted by a woman. He had a Black mother and father, adoptive parents, where she actually had some money, was solidly middle class, let's say, and doted on Peter with custom clothing and, you know, really instilled in him this work ethic to draw and paint every day, like some kids are made to sit at the piano and practice. Peter's mom seemed to make him sit down and draw, you know, and so that diligence he carries through to the day, this day, comes from his mom, and the love of jazz music also, which is a big part of his life and art. But you know, he seems to have been surrounded, seems to be placed even from the time of high school. When I looked through his high school yearbook, and it's a mostly white high school, and he kind of operated in that white world, I guess, very comfortably. And living in downtown Manhattan, you know, as a young artist, he was, you know, in the Soho scene, where there weren't a lot of people of color at that time in the 70s, you know. So he talks about how, well, I wasn't hanging out in Harlem. I wasn't sitting around in black bars arguing about what white people are doing to me. I was trying to paint, you know. He would work all day, 9 to 5 at this art gallery and come back and paint. And that's all he was worried about. And so he knows what's going on in the world, but he hasn't seemed to have concerned himself with directly participating in any kind of political or social movements, you know. It's interesting.
Yeah, really. And I think actually in that scene that you're referring to, he actually says something to the effect of, you know, the white community didn't want anything to do with me, and the black community didn't want to do anything to do with me. And he was sort of caught in the middle.
Right. I mean, certainly, I mean, he had some very close friends that were white artists. So it's not like everyone in the art world was racist by any means. But he did, you know, in the interviews, he called out some people, you know, at least one of whom was fairly well known as being, you know, horribly racist, just overtly racist. And I didn't want to get sued for libel or anything by putting that kind of in there, but you know, just the reference he makes that there were, it's very powerful. You know, he had his first one-man show at this prestigious gallery in 1972, and he describes how a lot of the white artists came, but they all hung out in the hallway and wouldn't come in the actual gallery, which must have been incredibly hurtful, you know. But then at the same time, there were certainly other black artists that were jealous of the position he had at the art gallery, you know, as an art dealer, and then also being able to get represented by Emmerich, so, and having money, you know. And so it's like he was caught in a way in between, kind of between two worlds, which I don't know how he navigated. I guess he just didn't think, he didn't dwell on it, you know. He just was, like a lot of artists, like a lot of male artists, and particularly of his generation, they're very like egotistical, and there's an arrogance where they're just kind of, you know, F you, I'm doing my thing and deal with it. And I think that's what got him through. But that was also the kind of attitude where he said, well, screw this, I'm moving up to Saugerties. I'm tired of all the bullshit, you know?
Right.
And so, which is how I was able to meet him years later. Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things I love about this film is that it's a film about color, but it's also a film about color. You've got it going on two levels here.
It's funny you say that, because I tried so hard to engage Peter on that, because it was very kind of clear to me that, you know, it's happening on these two levels, and he really couldn't. It was funny. He's like, nah, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking
really?
About.
Really? He didn't draw a connection to that?
He just couldn't. I was like, okay, forget it. I'm going out on a limb. but yeah, it's completely there. Subtextually, it's totally there. You're right.
Absolutely. One of the things I was curious too, I mean, you spent so much time with him, but you're also a filmmaker. The relationship between color and music is brought up in here, and sound, you know, every sound has a color, he says.
Yeah.
I was just wondering your thoughts on that, because I thought that was such a fascinating idea. I never thought of it that way. And as soon as he said it, I thought maybe that's true, but I don't know what you think.
Well, more true for some than others, in terms of the physiological, psychological response to it. In fact, if I hadn't settled on With Peter Bradley as the name of the film, I think Every Sound Has a Color might have been what I called the film. It's just a great image somehow. But yeah, Peter Peter has what they call synesthesia. You know, he literally sees sound as color. I mean, it's very, very cut and dry to him. I mean, I've never experienced it, although when he talks about it in the film, I tried to show some painting examples where he's talking about the sound of a trumpet. I see these colors, or the sound of a bass. I see more blue and brown, and you kind of get it, you know. It would be cool. I'd love to experience that. But it's very, you know, I mean, certainly for the film, it's a very cinematic concept. And since film is audio visual, of course, you know, the soundtrack of the film really helps to support that idea the whole time. And I was fortunate, Javon Jackson did an incredible original jazz score, which was recorded live with his quintet. That's also a nice story too, because Peter's known Javon, the composer, since the late 1980s, when Javon played with Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, right out of music school, out of Berklee College of Music. And so Javon, when he saw the film, totally got where Peter was coming from, because he knew Peter from coming to see shows all the time. Peter's just an avid, you know, music fan, and would go and hang out with all these guys when they would play in New York. Yeah, I had used on the temporary score when I was editing, I took all these CDs from Peter's house that were the classics, you know, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, you know, Charles Mingus, and I just used them freely to kind of figure out the pacing of things and put music. And I couldn't afford that stuff, of course, but Javon heard what I used and completely kind of internalized it, and then brought it back through in his own arrangements that had that feel. And so I re the music really is, you know, a character in a way to the film, for sure.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. It flows so beautifully.
Thank you.
Just to, you know, as we start to wrap up, I don't know if this is a question. This is just a question that I wrestled with as I was watching the film, because there's so much going on. Peter's experiences in the midst of all this art. But I'm wondering about the relationship that you see between art and hope, because I think I think that idea sort of is played with within the film. But I also, you know, knowing Peter, he might have said, "Ah, you're overthinking it." But
Probably would.
I'm
Well,
just wondering what you think.
I think that's really nice that you that that resonated with you, that thought. I mean, for me, certainly one of the underlying themes of Peter's story is just the importance, the human importance of creative expression. You know, that it's just an innately human thing, which sadly so many of us are not really encouraged to do as children. I mean, some of us are encouraged in the arts, but a lot of us, you know, every kid likes to sit and draw, but then at some point we look around and we're like, oh, I don't draw well. You know, I'm not good at this. I went through that. I picked up a camera instead. And it's terrible, really. I mean, certainly, Peter, whether he would acknowledge it or not, I mean, that daily practice of painting or making sculpture, which he does also, or just drawing, that's therapeutic, you know, that's therapeutic for anybody, just as a break from other routines. But for him particularly, you know, I think that it must have been great for him just to throw himself into that work and not think about other stuff. And then the beauty, the sheer beauty of the images he creates on canvas, I would think, you know, lift him up further, you know, just in that act of creation and recognizing what he's made, you know. It's very interesting looking at even older Peter Bradley paintings to new ones. There's something about them that you would recognize. You know, there's something, even though he never repeats himself, which is another thing that I really love about him. I've never seen him do the same thing twice, always subtly like trying different things. They have this nice, you know, the watery aspect to them, almost a feminine kind of quality to them, you know, as opposed to some of the other artists of his generation where it was very, you know, like the straight lines and much more masculine kind of expressions. There's this earthiness, you know, lunar, more of a lunar than solar kind of vibe to some of the stuff he does. So yeah, I've been told by a number of people they're inspired to want to just pick up paint and start painting after watching the film, which is great.
Yeah, there's sort of a sense in this that anybody can, because it's about expression. Yeah. And I absolutely, it's a wonderful piece. He seems like a great guy. Thank you so much
for
chatting with me, Alex. I really do appreciate it. I wish you the best for the film. Thank you so much.
Thanks, my pleasure. Take care.
All right, thanks. Take care.